Good morning. It's Monday, November 26th, 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to KCAW. I'm Chris Todd with Raven News. The clock is ticking on a recount of ballots in House District 34. Division of Elections Director Gail Fanoumiai certified the race on Friday, which means a request for a recount must be made by Wednesday of this week. The totals changed slightly after the State Review Board's process, but only very slightly. Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins picked up 2 votes. That puts the new total at 4,125 for Christ Tompkins and 4,091 for his opponent, Republican incumbent Bill Thomas of Haines. Division of Elections Director Gail Fanoumiai explains that 2-vote adjustment.
They came from a Sitka precinct where the number of precinct registered signatures was greater than the number of cards cast, and so the State Review Board ran the ballots, and Mr. Christ Tompkins gained 2 votes in that precinct.
The race remains within the margin for a state-funded recount. Thomas said on Friday he's still considering whether to ask for that recount. Children's brains are like sponges. They soak up languages and absorb impressions of the world. But this also means their minds retain bad experiences, such as domestic violence. Prevention programs in Sitka are working with young kids to give them the tools they need to process feelings and become more resilient. In part one of a 2-part series, KCAW's Ann Bryce explores programs that aim to create personal connections through group activities.
Under Alaska law, a child's exposure to violence in the home is considered a mental injury. The damage it causes can be severe and persistent, even changing the way a young brain develops.
It really reverts you back down to the more primitive parts of the brain, keeps you in that fight or flight response.
Elena Gustafson is the youth outreach coordinator at the local women's shelter, Sitkins Against Family Violence, or SAFE. She says children internalize violence in the home, whether they witness it or not.
Even if they don't see things directly, they feel that tension and they really embody it.
For nearly a decade, SAFE has been the recipient of a federal grant through the CDC to support primary prevention of intimate partner violence within the community. Gustafson runs a program at SAFE that uses art.
A lot of these art projects are, one, to identify their feelings, which is very important because they need to be able to recognize those to know how to process anger and sadness and how to really incorporate into themselves feelings of joy and pride.
For kids, Gustafson says sometimes healing is as simple as kids just saying what's important to them.
I like playing Game Boy fighting.
Okay. You like playing Game Boys. Okay. What else do you like?
These are still kids who are caring about their favorite colors, what their favorite color is, or talk about how they really like to jump rope or things like that, and we need to celebrate that.
Alaska has one of the highest domestic violence rates in the nation. Nearly half of Alaska's women have experienced intimate partner violence in their lifetime. That puts the state third, behind Oklahoma and Nevada, but well above the national average of about 36%.
Kids who have experienced trauma often tend to either be very withdrawn or very hyperactive and agitated. They really don't see how their actions are connected with the outside world to the point of, you know, causing violence to other people and not understanding that that was wrong.
But Gustafson says blaming or punishing kids for misbehaving isn't the answer.
You know, you can't just label a child a trouble kid and say, oh, there's not going to be any hope for them, right? Or like, they're just a bad kid, and so we're going to punish them. You can't do that. Often, those kids are the ones who need more positive reinforcement, more support.
We all are born good. There's not one baby in the world that we go, oh, that's a bad baby. Forget it, you know. Just write that baby off.
Brian Sparks works at SAFE as a domestic violence prevention specialist.
And somehow, 18 years later, they're not good anymore. Well, so what happened? What's messed up about the system? And so we're just trying to find out what's messed up and correct that.
Sparks coordinates a local branch of the national program called Girls on the Run. It's an after-school program for 3rd to 5th grade girls.
It's all about creating connections. We're working on establishing peer groups and creating stronger bonds between peers.
The program will be in its 5th year this spring at Keetgushihin Elementary School.
The activity, which is going to involve running somehow, like maybe running to the other end of the gym, telling a girl something they like about that girl, and then running back, and then just doing that over and over again.
He says prevention programs are important for every person, regardless of age or gender, but there are certain benefits to starting young.
Certainly, younger girls, or younger people, are more ready for some knowledge than they would be at another age. In middle school is a time where they want to listen to their peer group more than they want to listen to adults. But in third grade, the girls are really proud that they're wearing the same T-shirt as their coach. They love it. It's the best thing in the world for them. They get to talk about, you know, not gossiping. And oh, they love it. It's fantastic. But imagine that in eighth grade. No way.
The hope is that these girls will pass their knowledge along to other peers and bring it with them into adulthood.
They spread these lessons, let's say the not gossiping lesson. Well, okay, so now if somebody who's not in Girls on the Run, you know, starts to gossip, there's a critical mass of girls who have attended Girls on the Run who don't accept that behavior anymore. It's a program that I think really creates resiliency within the girls individually and also within their peer groups and within the community. It just brings people together, and that creates resiliency.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
That was part one of a two-part series by KCAW's Ann Bryce about violence prevention programs in Sitka that work with young children. In part two, we'll examine some direct strategies for helping kids stay safe and the cost of failure. In 2010, researchers released results of a statewide victimization survey that showed nearly 60% of Alaska's women have experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both in their lifetime. In the 2 years since, they've released results for 8 individual Alaska communities. The numbers for Sitka showed almost half of the women surveyed experienced some form of intimate partner or sexual violence. And those numbers, while perhaps alarming, are not unique to Sitka. Here's Angela Deming Barnes reporting from Bethel, where the statistics look very similar.
The survey interviewed 514 adult women in the YK Delta. It found that 51% had experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both at some point in their life. It also found that 17% had experienced this kind of violence within the past year. 17% is equivalent to
more than 1,200 women.
Andre Rosé is with the University of Alaska's Justice Center, which conducted the survey between March and May. Rosé says learning the differences between violence in the past year versus a lifetime can help the state direct proper services.
The lifetime numbers may indicate some historical trauma that needs to be addressed.
Lori Morton wasn't surprised by the numbers, but that's because she's worked with victims for many years through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
I think if you've not experienced working with women as they come forward, it's shocking. You don't want to think that the numbers are as high as they are.
Survey backers say the estimates are conservative, possibly very conservative in some regions. The survey only included women who had access to a phone line in an environment where they felt they could talk freely for about a half an hour. Rosé says it did not include women living in shelters, hospitals, or prison, and it was only in English.
We also know that the estimates are conservative because of the continuing stigma that's associated with disclosing intimate partner violence and sexual violence, particularly to a stranger on the phone. That's a very difficult thing to do.
Still, the survey gives the state a broad baseline of data about victims, something they never had before.
One of the problems that we've had in the past is that everything that we used to know about domestic violence and sexual violence was based on law enforcement reports.
We kept getting asked that particular question, which was, what's our rate of victimization? And we would say, we don't know.
Katie Tipas works with the governor's office. She says now they know exactly what they're up against.
What we can emphatically state is that across the state, our rates are way too high. We have horrific rates, so it doesn't matter where people are residing, they're horrific. And so as a state, all of us have to do something.
Statewide, the Alaska Victimization Survey interviewed 871 adult women. It found that 59% have experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both at some point in their lifetime. About 12% had within the past year. The whole project started in 2010 with plans to survey all regions of the state. The goal is for the survey to be repeated every 5 years. Again, Lori Morton.
While the lifetime numbers probably won't change, we're hoping that maybe the previous year numbers will see an adjustment.
Locally, the survey was well received. Michelle DeWitt has directed the Tender Women's Coalition, a regional women's shelter in Bethel, for 15 years. She was impressed that over 500 women felt comfortable enough to talk about the abuse over the phone to a stranger.
The fact that so many of the individuals completed the entire interview, which was about 30 minutes. And I think that, you know, a lot of that has to do with all of the work that's been done for many, many years across the Delta to make an impact on issues related to domestic violence and sexual assault.
DeWitt believes over the past few decades, there has been an attitude shift in the YK Delta about domestic violence and sexual assault that's making it easier for people to seek shelter and services.
Because we've created an environment in the region where people are much more willing to discuss issues around domestic violence or sexual abuse, we may have a group of people who are more likely to engage in the research, to speak with the researchers, to request services, to disclose and to report abuse.
As for how Alaska's rates compare nationally, that's still unknown. But Rosé with the UAA Justice Center says they are working on those details. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Alaska State Troopers say two Juneau brothers have died after their boat was hit by a wave near Tenneke Springs on Friday. Troopers have identified the men as 23-year-old Kelly Newman and 26-year-old Casey Newman. Troopers say the brothers and the third man, 20-year-old Jim Brown Jr. of Juneau, were in an 18-foot skiff Friday when a wave washed over the stern, causing the boat to sink. Brown made it to shore and was treated for non-life-threatening injuries. Troopers say volunteers began searching for the brothers and notified U.S. Coast Guard, which sent out a helicopter crew for the search. Troopers say Kelly Newman was found unresponsive and efforts to revive him failed. Casey Newman's body was found Saturday.